From Erie to Harrisburg, Uniontown to Pittston, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is a job-crushing compact that would raise energy prices for Pennsylvania consumers. David Taylor and Rebecca Euler are joined by Sean Steffi of Boilermakers Local 154 for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And Governor Tom Wolf continues to exercise unchecked power amid the COVID-19 pandemic. I'll have a town hall commentary on why giving voters the right to recall statewide elected officials is needed to restore balance. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. He's not ready to give up his emergency powers just yet. Governor Tom Wolf has signed yet another 90-day extension of his disaster emergency declaration over the COVID-19 pandemic. The governor claims the magnitude or severity of the problem continues and that emergency action is needed to protect the health, safety, and welfare of Pennsylvanians. Many, including solid majorities in both houses of the General Assembly, disagree with that analysis. The legislature passed a resolution ending the governor's emergency powers, but then saw that action overturned by the Democrat-dominated state Supreme Court. Wolf has used his emergency powers to, among other steps, enact a draconian lockdown of state residents and place restrictions on businesses that are causing many, especially restaurants and bars, to close their doors. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney is the latest Democrat to get into hot water for not following his own COVID-19 related restrictions. Back in June, Governor Tom Wolf marched with protesters after weeks of preaching to Pennsylvanians, urging them to avoid large gatherings. Kenney has refused to allow restaurants in Philadelphia to resume indoor dining, causing many to close their doors for good. The mayor was photographed last week dining indoors at a friend's restaurant in Maryland, prompting an outcry and charges of hypocrisy. Earlier in the pandemic, State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine came under fire for removing her own mother from a personal care home as the COVID-19 pandemic spread. Since then, over 5,000 elderly Pennsylvanians who were residents of personal care and nursing homes have died from the disease. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, known as REGI, is a multi-state compact intended to fight climate change, but which would actually cost Pennsylvanians jobs and raise energy prices for all consumers. Here to take a look at the impact is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Sean Steffi from Boilermakers Local 154 in Pittsburgh. Dave?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
Well, you know, it seems like these issues, we grind through them and it never ends. But, you know, one of the really hot issues, and the listeners have heard us describe this issue before on the program, is the governor's attempt to impose a carbon tax on Pennsylvania's power generation sector, this so-called regional greenhouse gas initiative. And actually, in the course of trying to stop this, because the governor, he's trying to do it unilaterally and bypassing the General Assembly, and it's going to kill off a lot of jobs if this is allowed to be imposed, that emerging from this, that we have the new Power PA Jobs Alliance, which is a remarkable business labor coalition to fight for these jobs. And that's why I'm so excited for the listeners to welcome to the program today my friend Sean Steffi, who's the business agent for Boilermakers Local 154 in Pittsburgh. Sean, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
If we have this carbon tax imposed on the economy, it's going to wipe out all of our coal-fired electricity generation, even though these plants are in compliance today, even though the owners of these plants have spent enormous money to upgrade them to keep them in compliance with current EPA and DEP standards. It's just moving the goalposts again. It's not right. It's going to hurt working people. And again, it's I was so proud. It was just yesterday. There was an op-ed by Rick Bloomingdale and Frank Snyder from the AFL-CIO. And, you know, over the years, I've had a lot of scraps with those guys. But what they wrote made good sense, and it's on this subject. And they wrote, environmental sustainability cannot be economically unsustainable. And I just think that that's the absolute heart of the matter.
I absolutely believe so, too. The article was very well written. And, you know, my biggest problem with the whole Reggie scenario is, why would Pennsylvania want to join this without being the only energy exporter to join it? All the other states are importers, and West Virginia and Ohio will completely benefit from this, and they are not going to join Reggie. So my big point is, if everybody joined Reggie in the PJM, I don't want it to, but if they all did, then the playing field would be level and the goalposts wouldn't be moved.
We need to have a system that makes sense, a structure that makes sense. And I think, actually, Sean, you were the one who said that the coal-fired plants that are right across the border would take up the slack, that this wouldn't really result in any reduced carbon emissions at all. And so it's like playing whack-a-mole, and we shouldn't take these steps just to feel good about ourselves. Like, we should have policy proposals that actually are effective.
Exactly. And, you know, to, you know, go to your point on that, I mean, I can tell you right now, in the spring, my members from Pennsylvania, they traveled to Ohio and West Virginia and worked at the coal-fired facilities in Ohio and West Virginia, because I had no outages here at my big three coal-fired plants, and they're going to do the same thing this fall. I already talked to Local 667. They're going to have 6, 8, 10-week outages down at, you know, their power plants again. And again, I'm not going to have any. So right now, I'm already feeling the effects of Reggie before it's even implemented, just the threat of it. And if anybody can get on the PJM generation fuel mix and see that coal is not going nowhere, and natural gas is definitely not going nowhere, and we're going to tax it right out of our state. And Pennsylvania is the electricity leader in generating electricity, and we're willing to give up an industry right now on top of the COVID-19,
yeah,
you know, pandemic that we should not be doing this. Why are we cutting more jobs on top of what we're already filling?
Going along with something that you're both talking about here is, Pennsylvania is an energy exporter, and it would be the only one in Reggie that's an energy exporter. I think that we're number two in the whole country of energy exporting states, which is pretty amazing. So energy is an advantage for Pennsylvania. And I know our listeners here have heard us talk a lot about the disadvantages Pennsylvania has.
Things we've got to work on, yes.
But energy is not one of them. So to put a tax on our energy production, I think we're not, and we're going to be wasting that, shooting ourselves in the foot and wasting that natural advantage that we have. And I think not only we, you know, we're exporting energy now, if we have Reggie, and I think, you know, from what Sean is saying, we're going to be exporting jobs, not energy.
It's also all of the downstream users, of course, for manufacturing, that manufacturers consume huge amounts of energy, and that our ability to compete to sustain those manufacturing jobs, that also, if the price point on energy moves, that disadvantages us, and that endangers other people's jobs. And of course, manufacturing has the strongest spinoff effect. It's not just what happens on the plant floor. It's all the logistics. It's all the distribution. There are an awful lot of trucking and forklift jobs that depend on what happens on that manufacturing plant. So this is why we need a pro-growth, pro-production agenda on Pennsylvania energy. And that's why I'm so proud of the Power PA Jobs Alliance, because, like, this seems to be – and I want to have your thoughts, Sean. Like, this is the emerging consensus. We are for jobs. We are for production here at home.
Exactly. And I think that this should not even be a political issue. This is a no-brainer. This is jobs.
Yes, sir.
This should be totally bipartisan. And as somebody that's lived through the outsourcing of manufacturing, because before I became a boilermaker, I worked in manufacturing, and my job got outsourced. I had multiple jobs outsourced, and I've heard this retraining thing. I know how to write a resume. The retraining thing isn't working out, and we don't need retrained. We need to bring more manufacturing in, and us as boilermakers would like to take our electricity generation to the next level, providing, you know, cheap electricity, because that is a big issue with manufacturing, to have it competitive. And we should have learned our lesson from what has happened in China through this pandemic. We should be looking to bring everything we can back, and we can do it in Pennsylvania, and there would be nothing better to see than all of our products here stamped made in the USA and manufactured right here in Pennsylvania.
No, amen to that.
One of the things the governor keeps saying as a justification for joining REGI is that it's going to create a lot of green jobs, jobs in renewable energy. Sean, what is your experience? What's your thought on green jobs? And will REGI create green jobs?
Well, here's what I can tell you on this, Rebecca. The green energy jobs, solar and wind, for us as boilermakers, we have no jurisdiction in that. So I don't see the IBEW saying, hey, we know you're hurting, we're going to give you the solar industry. I don't see the iron workers saying, hey, we're going to give you a part of the wind industry. I'm just basically not going to have no work in any of the green new jobs. And these green new jobs that they're talking about, I have yet to see one of them step up and tell me a specific site or a specific job that shows all the building trades working at these facilities, because they don't have them. And these jobs, if you look them up, and these jobs like a solar technician are about $24,000 a year, and they're $14 an hour. And I've given the numbers. They have all of our jurisdiction. They have all of our wages and rates. And not one person has given me any comparison, because they can't. And I'm waiting, and I think that everybody would like to hear about these green new jobs, because we sure ain't seeing them in Western Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers, with Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, Sean Steffi from Boilermakers Local 154. And Sean, I don't know if you received a personal apology, but it was interesting that that Greg Vitale, State Representative Vitale from Delaware County, at the latest Environmental and Energy Resources Committee hearing, that he actually apologized for his behavior at the previous hearing. And I believe that that was, you know, about his behavior towards you, that that was just an unseemly spectacle, that here you have a state rep from Villanova, PA, one of the wealthiest communities in the Commonwealth, berating you for sticking up for the jobs for you and your workers.
Absolutely, but he was arguing with the wrong guy, because I have the facts. The facts stand on our side. And the fact of it is no matter how you slice it, we still need the uses of fossil fuels, whether it's oil, gas, coal. Our whole lives, they go around fossil fuels, and we cannot eliminate them. But we do need to find environmentally friendlier ways to do that, and we have the technology to do that. So the boilermakers would like to usher in a new era in the future, and we're ready to build it. We're ready to build any of the new technologies that come out to energize Pennsylvania and our country, and do it environmentally friendly, not like they're doing it in China, India, and Indonesia. The biggest injustice of being called clean, renewable energy, every one of these renewables, solar and wind, cannot even be conceived without energy-intensive industries and fossil fuel.
Exactly.
So, I mean, how are we going there? Why? Let's speak the truth. Let's get the truth out.
We just want to have an honest conversation where, you know, recognizing that every energy source has industrial inputs and environmental impacts. But we're being made to pretend that you don't have to mine the coal to make the coke, to make the steel, to make the tower upon which the wind turbine rests. you know, that we're supposed to pretend that the, you know, that solar panels that spring up like dandelions, that you don't have to go to China to mine rare earth minerals to make them. It's just like, let's get rid of the of this fantasy talk and have an honest conversation based on facts.
One of the things that gets missed a lot, I think, and which was apparent in the Department of Environmental Protection's modeling, is that even if we were to put RGGI into place, it's not really going to it's not going to have an impact on the environment. It's going to result in an emissions reduction, I think I heard of about 0.05% of carbon dioxide emissions. I mean, U.S. emissions total, and that's like a rounding error. So when we're putting, you know, folks out of jobs and we're depressing our economy to the extent that this is going to be, I don't understand when we talk about facts how anyone can justify the costs involved in something that's really going to have no benefit.
And if I could just add to that, Rebecca, the other thing that really bothers me is they're all projecting this amount of these millions of dollars that will be, come with the revenue of RGGI.
Yeah.
Well, if these plants are not here, they're not getting that revenue. The only thing that's going to change is our unemployment numbers and manufacturing leaving our state to go where they can get the electricity needs at a cheaper price.
You know, when we're talking about our coal-fired electricity generation, that it's pretty well concentrated in Armstrong, Indiana, and Cambria counties. And that, you know, as you have shared, in testimony, these plants, they're workhorses, not just for generating electricity, which everybody needs, but also that they are their major employers, their major contributors to the tax base in these communities. And, I'm from the Laurel Highlands, too. And, you know, for people who are familiar with that part of the world, life's a little slower. And the assets that we have there are more precious to our communities. And so that's another thing that is just so deeply offensive about this very high-handed, imperious, unilateral RGGI thing, is that you're going to knock these rural communities who really just can't take the hit.
Just my hometown alone, Homer City, the tax base it makes up to make my alma mater, Homer City School District, run will be devastating. I'm not sure if it will close, but it really would lead that way. And for the rest of the small school district, something's going to have to change because it will just crush them on a tax base. And you know, we have Conemaugh, Keystone, Homer City, Seward. These are all giant tax bases within the Heritage Conference schools that is going to really suffer.
Just to come back to the proposal the governor has, he is going to deliver this RGGI proposal. It's going to be a regulation that he's going to deliver to the committee that approves these regulations on September 15th, I believe. But backing up from that, the Department of Environmental Protection delivers these regulations, these proposed regulations, and shows them to committees beforehand. So there were three committees at DEP that actually, citizens advisory committees as such, that voted this down. And I think that in part it was because they recognized exactly what you're saying, Sean, about the impact on these communities, and never was the administration able to really explain how we're going to deal with the level of devastation that's going to happen in some of these communities. I know in my own advisory committee, I'm on the Small Business Compliance Advisory Committee, and we had a member talk about the impact on his local school district and how, you know, the costs are going to be immense and having to manage the loss in property taxes. So I think that you talked about the money that RGGI's going to raise. I think it's been promised so many times over that there's no way it's gonna come close to meeting the costs involved. It's been promised for job training, like you said, Sean. It's been promised for impacts. It's been promised for green jobs. It's been promised so many times over, and it just doesn't pass the smell test. There's not enough money that's going to be generated in order to deal with all of these impacts.
You're exactly right, Rebecca. You hit the nail right on the head. And, you know, if we could keep generating cheap electricity moving forward with gas and coal, and, you know, you guys know as better than I do, that will, you know, breed manufacturing jobs and bring it back into our rural communities. Let's face it. Amazon, Microsoft, and the rest of them are not moving into rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But we do have a chance for manufacturing facilities to come back and create new manufacturing facilities in medical supplies, et cetera. And I just think that this is a no-brainer that we absolutely need to get and push Reggie out of the agenda.
Well, amen to that. And you know, and following on what Rebecca said, you know, if for people who are concerned about global warming, you're in the wrong country. You know, that in the United States, in Pennsylvania, we have some of the strictest rules in the world, and that we're, you know, we're doing it the right way. And if you keep turning the screws on us here, all that's going to do is send the business to other places where there are no rules at all, or much more lax rules, because, you know, these other places have so much more pollution. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself, and sadly, we're running out of time. But Sean, it is a privilege to work with you with the Power PA Jobs Alliance. For the listeners, where can they go to learn more about you and the Boilermakers and the things that you're doing?
Well, of course, you can go to the Power PA Jobs Alliance or powerpajobs.com. And WIP 154 also has a website, Local 154. But feel free for anybody to reach out to me or see me. I'd be more than glad to, you know, explain anything I needed to about Reggie, because whether I like it or not, I've been the mouthpiece of it for our local. And I'll continue to. I look at it this way. We're in the two-minute warning. We got to keep pushing. Come September 15th, we got to push Reggie out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir. Amen to that. Rebecca, where can folks find you?
Well, we're also very proud at NFIB to be part of the Power PA Jobs Coalition. But you can find us on our website, of course, at nfib.com/PA.
Outstanding. One more time, powerpajobs.com. You can find us at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. From Rebecca and Sean and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The 13 American colonies had tried and failed to develop a unified governmental framework under the Articles of Confederation. So it was that upon conclusion of the Constitutional Convention in September of 1878, legend holds a citizen walked up to Benjamin Franklin as he exited Independence Hall and asked him what type of government would be established for the new nation. He responded, "A republic, if you can keep it." It hasn't been easy, and at times the republic has teetered on the brink, but we've been able to keep that republic largely intact. One of the key principles of our governmental system is a carefully crafted system of checks and balances. Having recently freed the nation from the clutches of a despotic king, the founders were intent on preventing another tyrant from rising in what became the United States of America. Here in Penn's Woods, where our venerable Constitution was drafted, our state's system of checks and balances has broken down, giving rise to the very abuses of executive powers our founding fathers feared. Under the guise of protecting the public health during the COVID-19 pandemic, Governor Tom Wolf has assumed a historic level of power that quite literally has touched upon the lives of every single Pennsylvanian. The legislative and judicial branches are designed to put a check on such executive power. But the judicial branch has become perverted at the highest level by an activist bench whose decisions are dictated by political calculus rather than constitutional or legal precepts. Instead of being a check on executive excess, the state Supreme Court has become an enabler of that abuse. As a result of this alliance, the General Assembly has seen its powers emasculated. This is not to say that legislators have not tried, because they have. Legislators even took the bold action of nullifying the governor's emergency powers, only to see the Supreme Court engage in an extraordinary display of judicial pretzel logic to achieve the governor's political goals. Republicans, and occasionally a Democrat or two, have passed numerous laws aimed at reopening Pennsylvania and restoring the balance of power. Those efforts have uniformly met with a gubernatorial veto. While the GOP holds a majority in both legislative chambers, they do not have the two-thirds majorities needed to override vetoes. Not enough Democratic lawmakers will put the will of the people over partisan pressures, so those vetoes have stood. And so legislators took the next available step, which is to propose a constitutional amendment that would give the General Assembly the clear authority to end declarations of emergency and thereby rein in the despotic tendencies of future governors. That amendment must be approved again in the next session, likely in January, and then win voter approval in the May 2021 primary election. It will be at least the end of May then before the wolf can be brought to heel. There is one other step lawmakers should consider: a constitutional amendment giving we the people the right to recall statewide elected officials. Many states, notably California, empower citizens to recall governors, judges, and other elected officials if, during their terms of office, they lose the consent of the governed. Tom Wolf is governing with arrogance and impunity precisely because he is no longer accountable to voters. Constitutionally limited to two terms in office, he cannot seek re-election. Thus, his political career is coming to an end. Simply put, he doesn't care what people think. He can do whatever he wants, and he's getting away with it. By putting a constitutional amendment giving voters the right of recall into play, both the governor and the justices on the state Supreme Court would immediately become accountable. True, it would be November of next year before anyone could be recalled, but no elected official wants the stain of a recall vote on their legacy. This would give voters the opportunity to render a real verdict on the governor's performance and do so a year earlier than the scheduled 2022 gubernatorial election. It would be a mechanism for holding him accountable. A recall provision would have an even more profound impact on the state Supreme Court. Justices serve 10-year terms, then stand for retention rather than re-election. Facing the possibility of recall, justices would be more likely to stay in their lane of judicial review rather than their current habit of being super lawmakers. If the legislature really wants to restore constitutional checks and balances and reclaim their rightful place in state government, moving a recall amendment now would be an effective way of curbing the wolf power grab and of proving to Ben Franklin that, yes, a republic is something we can keep. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. Normally, you hear us talking about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference in the spring. This year's conference was postponed to September 25th and 26th due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, because of Governor Tom Wolf's draconian restrictions on in-person gatherings, this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held virtually. The conference is typically the largest gathering of conservatives and activists every year in the Keystone State, and while this year's event will be held virtually, it will feature the usual wide array of compelling speakers and critical issue panels. To see this year's agenda and to register at no charge to view the virtual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, September 25th and 26th, go to paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.